Is there anyone who still cares? Is there anyone who knows? Is there anyone that cares? As Dylan said.
And you are in Beato mode. Jesus.
Welcome to Tune Change,
a show where two music jerks try to give albums a chance.
So my whole experience with this dog shit record that we're talking about, hey, welcome to Tune Change, where the tunes don't change, people do. We are talking about Steely Dan's Two Against Nature. It's from the year 2000. We're going to say more words about it than it has ever merited. It was eye-opening to listen to this alongside editing the Eric Clapton record.
Yeah.
Episode, and realizing how much more I enjoyed listening to Motherless Children and Mainline Florida than I did anything on this record. And it's not fucking close. It's not a hard decision. I would listen to those two songs over and over again for 50 minutes gladly compared to this record.
Couple of things. We must note, this is album of the year Grammy winner, Two Against Nature by Steely Dan. Yeah. 2001 Grammys.
Better get fucked, kid A.
Which Marshall Mathers
actually beat and the Marshall Mathers LP. I don't know why it tickles me so much that this Steely Dan record that's just a nothing beat specifically Kid A and the Marshall Mathers LP. but we do have to acknowledge that if you think Eminem gives a fuck about a Grammy, he has a retort. A pretty particular one, where a lot of people who didn't do anything wrong catch a lot of heat.
As is sometimes the case with him. But
these track lengths are fucking depraved. Speaking of Eminem and depravity.
Here's the thing. It's only 9 tracks, but when they're almost all 5 minutes plus.
No, I'll read them for you. 5:55, 5:17, 6:18, two fours in a row, another 6:18, 5:28, 5:35, and then 8 minutes and 22 seconds for West of Hollywood.
We got to leave room for the honky saxophone.
Eight minutes and a half. I tell you, I thought Negative Girl was the end of the record. and then West of Hollywood started, and I was like, oh, what's the...
Negative Girl's probably my favorite.
It's easily my favorite. And I was just thinking to myself, we might as well say I was going to say one nice thing about this record. Actually, I have two.
Okay.
Negative Girl has a marimba in it. I always like marimba. Kind of doesn't matter the context. And second, the last 2 minutes of Negative Girl are the only time this record has any sort of feel or substance, because it's the only time there's any sort of room sound or kind of atmosphere of any kind. Notes are allowed to play for more than a second at a time. So much of this record is staccato noises, just like banging at you from all directions.
Honks and squeaks and picks. And
it's nothing but. It's all little like blip, little accents just flying at you.
I must also note that in addition to winning Album of the Year, it also won Best Engineered Album Non-Classical at the 2001 Grammys. And I mean, everything that you have said is correct.
Shouldn't Album of the Year win Best Album Non-Classical? When's the last time
we may need to do just a Grammys what's going on there show, because in addition to Album of the Year, there is also, maybe record of the year is just songs, but they also won best pop vocal album. We got too many categories at the Grammys. Grammys of the EGOT, you know, mountain, the Grammys have to be the least prestigious of the of the EGOT awards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of trash has won some Emmys. Like, I feel like it's Emmys and Grammys, Tony, Oscar. I mean, Emmy is definitely above Grammy. Like,
but that's not to say that.
So Oscar and Tony are the, like, it just depends which kind of obnoxious actor person you're talking to, which one they want more. But those are the obnoxious actor person ones. And then Emmys and Grammys are for where the real scumbags of the entertainment industry can be found. TV and record executives, just little slime balls, you know?
What are you doing? Hanging out with TV producers. So we probably need to do a, you know, talk about Steely Dan generally, famously or infamously, or perhaps only famous to people who are older than us, and us because we're weird, named for a sex toy, 70s jazz radio, you know, highly regarded, I think, at the time.
Because, you know, they loved it when you spent like 11 years making two songs in the 70s. If you, like, everybody, like, people praised Fleetwood Mac for that, I think. How many times have you heard about, like, how obsessive they were about the guitar solo in Reel It In the Years? Like, how many separate times do you think you've heard about that? 15?
That is a famously excellent guitar solo, one of Jimmy Page's favorites. But yes, very, very studio obsessive, you know, bringing in lots of session players. I think in the early 70s, in the Can't Buy a Thrill era, they were more of a band. You know, is Steely Dan, two guys, Walter Becker and Donald Fagen.
Yeah, and then it turned into, like, what if Billy Corgan was actually two guys instead of one guy?
and they're both just as charming. So, you know, we've heard Reelin' in the Years, Do It Again. We'll turn it. I think a fan of Asia.
Yeah, Asia's not bad.
Asia, when all my dying dancing is through, I run to you.
The subject of classic albums documentary. I think I even had the DVD, or maybe I'm thinking of when it was on Netflix, you know, 15 years ago. But Steely Dan, jazz fusion, very obsessive, but in the 70s, pretty good. You know, several hits, and then this is kind of the most unnecessary continuation. Really, that I can I would have expected from them. That my biggest takeaway from this is, like, I mean, yeah, this is but I would just rather be listening to Black Cow or Peg.
My big takeaway is how can you be this obsessed with sounds and not make a single good one for 55 fucking minutes? They're supposedly this is. I'll save it for Production Junction, but, like, yeah, these sounds. I'd heard Reelin' in the Years like everybody else. I heard Do It Again. You know who I think I said this at the end of the last episode. I was confused them with Supertramp. And I like Supertramp like a lot more. Supertramp seems like the fun Steely Dan. Where they're just kind of goofballs. I mean, they're both like erudite 70s rock that kind of lacked a blues influence. It's like not hard rocking at
right,
all.
Right, right. Jazz heavy, jazz influence, certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, music college, they're telling you about all their diminished chords and augments and whatnot.
Oh yeah, this is Steely Dan. If your chord doesn't have a number in it, you get the fuck out. We don't want it. We'll sort of 13s and 11s and speaking of Supertramp, just real quick, I like Breakfast in America a lot, like a lot.
Oh, that's a fantastic record.
Yeah. Which, if you're not familiar, you may have downloaded this on Kazaa as "Take a Look at My Girlfriend" by Steely Dan. Like, here's the secret, y'all, is Supertramp is like kind of making sly digs at the culture way more effectively than Steely Dan, because Steely Dan's like elbowing you and like making sure you saw it.
Oh, there's nothing subtle here.
Yeah, Supertramp is like it's a jaunty sounding song. It's not as happy as it kind of appears.
Well, and also, I bet Supertramp's longest song is maybe 450. Certainly their longest hit.
they had fucking hooks. I mean, to be fair,
yes,
Steely Dan used to have hooks. They used to have a lot going for them. They got rid of all of it in between 1980 and 1998. They just kind of, don't need none of that.
It's bizarre.
Let's get to Production Junction, because I already said my two nice things. That's one more nice thing that I had planned. So Production Junction, I'm going to say it and you're going to laugh, and then I'm going to have to explain what the thing is because it's so niche. This is some general MIDI shit. All these sounds sound like the most just stone gray basic. What general MIDI is the set of sounds that would come kind of pre-programmed in a given like keyboard or program. It's a defined list of instruments, and they often use the same samples. And that kind of list of settings is like the Casio sounding instruments. That's what that is. It's called general MIDI because the channels would all map to standard instruments, which means that you could share a MIDI file, and like on my computer and yours, it plays a saxophone. Does it sound like ass? You bet it does, but it sounds sort of like a saxophone. All the sounds on this record are so basic, like preset level. Nothing sounds at all gritty or interesting. Every instrument on this record, I could say it's an electric piano, and like whatever you're imagining in your head, that's what it sounds like. There's nothing interesting about it.
Yeah, and that's not to say that some of the recording doesn't sound good.
No, it is to say that none of the recording sounds good. That is the point I am making. I think it all sounds very bad.
It's very sterile.
Hell yeah. This sounds like 1998 by way of 1991, because it's like got the like coffee shop sort of aesthetic with all the instruments. But the production is so clean, digital, nothing is out of place. You could tell they fucked with these drums forever and ever, and they sound horrible. Like,
we've been recording for 19 minutes and 40 seconds, and I knew we weren't going to make it to 20 minutes before we had to talk about the snare, because what's going on with this?
It keeps rising as the record goes. It just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. It starts like sort of reasonable, like late 90s. Look, everybody was piccolo snaring in the late '90s. You can't. It's like, look, is it trashy by today's standards? Like, yeah, the same way like Abe Lincoln was racist by today's standards. Like, yeah, it sounds like shit. But then it gets worse and worse and worse until the end, where it's like, it sounds like a sped up drum and bass sample. And I'm like, okay, now I'm into it. It's like cartoony.
Stretching all the way from here and now to hell and gone.
When it's that hyper stylized, it's like, all right, weird. At least it's a choice. You made a choice that's non-standard. By the time you got to, it's a 3-inch snare.
Yeah, I listened quite a bit in headphones. I thought the bass came out pretty, you know, the bass was probably my favorite part of every song. You know, I thought of everything, it was, and perhaps that is the instrument that is
the instrument that you famously just plug the fuck into
suited.
The you plug into the mixer, the mixing board, and don't fuck with too much.
No production choices at all.
I'm sorry, we are not done bitching about the drums yet. They made this is all live drums. I was shocked. I was like, what drum machines did they use? They futzed with these drums until they sound like uncanny valley level mechanical. They like to the extent that like the ride cymbal is so consistent that it sounds like a sample. Like that, guys, that's not good. It's supposed to have dynamic range and accents.
Not to go all Beato on anybody, but yeah, this is patient zero for terrible decisions in quantization.
And every review of this record talks about grooves and pockets. Y'all are not allowed to use those two words anymore. No. Like is it a groove? Sure. It does not groove in anyone's kind of like, it is not a groove in the spiritual sense. You know, it's
right. It has been the grooviness has been broken by, you know, by the wills they're trying so hard to be a groove, but everything is so straight and kind of chopped and on the grid that any groove that might have been there just doesn't materialize. And then there are songs that are like anti-grooves. The title track, Two Against Nature, they're trying to do a groove. I know what they're trying to do. It's a 6-8 thing. You can count it. You can kind of feel what they're going for. But it's so staccato. That's where all the staccato comes in. There's ba-da-ba-ba-ba-da-ba-ba, you know, pianos all over the place, and the drums and the pianos are always on the, you know.
This whole record is basically a thing that goes ba-da-ba-ba over and over again. There's a famous example we'll get to when we're talking about specific. So it all sounds like mall and movie theater music. This sounds like the music they would play in an ad at the movie theater for the movie theater. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like this, someone's about to start telling me about Marcus Theaters and my rewards points. Hey, Matt, what, Matt, you, what movie theater chain y'all using down there?
We've got Alamo.
They're serving people food.
They're serving food.
I can't do that.
It's not bad. We don't usually get a lot of food because it just, I don't like eating when, you know, it's, you can't eat a pizza in the dark whilst watching a movie, but I do like the seats and the assigned seats and, you know, it, like the movie going experience overall is nice. And we go to like, you know, historic screenings and stuff. I saw 2001 there a while back, and you know, I'd never seen it on big screen, and it was a goddamn revelation. But I know what you mean about the ad for a movie theater at the movie theater type feel to this. The thing that I kept thinking of, and you mentioned I think you mentioned marimba, and I'm thinking of vibraphone, but it's, you know, kind of in the field. It sounds like the interstitial music on Frasier, or like the, you know, like a, it would be used in an ad for the Frasier radio station whose call sign is escaping me at the moment, but yeah,
it's motel art. It's like made to not offend anybody. All the sounds are just like, can I just sneak past you here? I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to wake anybody up. We're just two against nature. We're just having
don't
a reunion,
you know,
album. And again, the drums, you give me 3 weeks with my SR-16. I could get there. Like lyrically, I don't have a lot to say lyrically. It's basically like, what if Tom Waits wrote about boring white men? It's like all these vignettes, and like, oh, this, yes, like they're, every single one is like the story of a guy who like he got up and he's like, I'm retired, I'm gonna go down and look at my boat, and then he
isn't
went home.
Isn't getting older a drag? The one word that came if I had to pick one word to describe the whole thing, the lyrics, the music, everything, it's lascivious. You know, when they were doing Hey 19, they were probably, I don't know, maybe in their 30s or something. Still gross, but at least it was,
yeah, but again, like,
you know,
gross,
comparable
gross by the standards. Every rock and roll artist before like 1972 had some song that was like, you're 13. They were all a bunch of creeps, but now, ooh, does it read,
yeah,
different
if
when you see
still...
this, when you see the Steely Dan looking like this with a big tubby bowling shirt up on state, like, it's a good idea for them to not tour, and they should have kept on not touring. Like, they got in at the end of like, you can still sell CDs. Like, what the fuck do you care?
Right.
So I think the most like lascivious weird song on this record is Janie Runaway. Which is about a girl who runs away from the girl runs away from home. I realize that not every song is written from the point of view of the singer. Like, I know John Lennon doesn't want to hold my hand, right? It would be weird if I reacted to it in that way. But the fact that Donald Fagen thinks this is like cutesy is,
he's having a dialogue,
is telling, because there's weird shit in this song.
Don't like
the,
it.
Yeah,
makes
the last
me uncomfortable.
The last chorus. So it's all about like this guy meets a runaway in a park, and he's like giving her gifts. So he picks up a runaway. In the last chorus, he says, "Who wants to have their birthday in Spain? It could be you.
Who's not afraid to try new things? Who gets to spend her birthday in Spain? Possibly you, Jamie."
It could be you is just too gross for words.
Yeah,
it's
who wants to suck an old nasty dick? It could be you. Lucky fucking you.
It's the outward pointing version of who's got two thumbs and just turned 50 and wants to do some lines off your bare ass. This guy. It's Janie Runaway is really uncomfortable. And the fact that it sounds like Frasier music makes it that much more kind of just disorienting. And it's like, wait, what?
This is the most prominent example also of the ba-da-ba-ba.
Oh, yes.
It could be you. Old nasty dick.
You are correct that Janie Runaway is probably the most uncomfortable. Can we talk about the single? Can we talk about Cousin Dupree? We must.
Honey, how you've grown like a rose. Well, we used to play when we were three. How about a kiss for your Cousin Dupree? How about a kiss for your Cousin Dupree?
What's this fella's situation?
I don't really know, and I don't want to know. I've listened as closely as I dare.
Is it Jermaine Dupri?
I make the big moves, do the big thing. Take small groups, turn them into big names. The big dog with the big chains, frostbit bracelet, the match can't say I'm the shit, man.
Oh, yikes. Look, I gotta be honest. By the time I was listening to Cousin Dupri, I was writing notes, and it was about an hour and a half ago. So, yeah, I am seeing troubling things.
I must also point out that this song, Cousin Dupree, won the 2001 Grammy Award for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group, or Group indeed, or Group with Vocal. And it's just, it's baffling. What?
Yeah, so it's a incest jazz pop number, is what we're talking about here. Look, if you inhabit this many horny characters, you can't like get mad when we sort of associate you with this sort of like creepy horniness, even if it's not at all true. I just think Donald Fagen, you just got to eat it. Like you just got to deal with it. You made this bed.
You're not giving me any reason to disbelieve that the subtext is text, guys. I'm glad that we both agreed on Negative Girl. I thought Negative Girl was just the right amount of kind of weird and jazzy. And
they turned on a delay pedal and they let chords ring out.
They did.
End of notes about why it's better. It's like the notes ring out. It's the first time that I'm like, oh, here's what a chord sounds like. Instead of having a chord just stab me in the ears. And sometimes it's from the left and sometimes it's from the right. Bah, 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 bah.
There's weird music.
This is a flat
trumpet.
Seventh. It's a flat seventh. Stab, 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 stab.
I think it's What a Shame About Me, which is my the other one that I liked. But again, at the end, there's just, hey, what if we did some like low mixed muted trumpet to literally fart around? It's like, let's.
The juxtaposition of like the careful production with the, and then we just dick around for 2 minutes. Like, then.
we are you probably more than me in terms of just, you know, number of artists listened to, but you know, we both have and continue to appreciate jazz music, but this is Jazz Odyssey from Spinal Tap, except they're dead. Yeah. Fucking serious.
Look, it's this staccato mess with piccolo snare all over the place where a 60-year-old man can't stop talking about who he wants to fuck. the songs, we haven't talked about, like, if the songs have a B section, it is like no more memorable than the A section, and sometimes they just don't have one. So right. These songs are samey and they're long. And you get to the end of the best part of the whole fucking record, and then there's 8.5 minutes of the worst part of the record to go. And you're standing there, and you've got your headphones on, and you thought you were done with podcast prep, and you could just go upstairs and have a moment to yourself. But then West of Hollywood has to come in and shit all over it. F minus, Steely Dan. Bad. We don't do grades, but for the first time I introduced a grading system. That's how much I hated this. I disliked this more than the Bonnie Raitt record, and I was in a much less charitable mood towards these two gentlemen. Had a lot of the same weaknesses of the, like, yep, that's what that always sounds like kind of Grammy shit. But oh boy, this is one of the worst, man.
Where's the hooks? Ba, ba, da, ba, 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 da, ba. It's not a hook. I'm sorry. And Bonnie Raitt, for as much as we didn't really care for that, she had some goddamn hooks. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, you know, there was. I was like, oh, here's where the chorus is every single time. All right. Well, okay, we're already kind of talking about Grammy shit. I think, really, I don't have much to say about the Grammy-ness of this record beyond what I already said, which is it beat Kid A and the Marshall Mathers LP.
Midnight Vultures was in there too, and I mean, I can't say that I've listened, you know, start to finish to Midnight Vultures, but I'm sure it's better than this. And
it's the only Beck album I ever, like, purchased a copy of.
Hmm.
I won't say how I have access to all the other Beck albums. I just won't mention it. And that will lead to people not being suspicious.
It's almost gothic, but it's better than that.
Reading about this record, you know, the little bit that I did, you know, kind of, I think this is definitely example, but I think the example of the phenomenon that I'm thinking of is Jethro Tull winning the 89 Best Hard Rock Grammy over Metallica. Now, granted, you know, Metallica has kind of made it their business to, you know, perhaps I'm falling for big Metallica propaganda, but like, just weird, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. If Metallica had won that Grammy, they could have, like, played their music for it and, like, fine aged it like they do with their whiskey.
Oh man, that's that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. Lars, I did know that they did that. I believe that I learned about that watching Pop Culture Jeopardy. But yes, I unfortunately was aware of that.
Blackened is the air, and it's stupid. Indeed, yeah. Pantera plays their music for a lot of Keystone Ice. It doesn't help. It's just badass. They don't pretend it has anything to do with the music.
Yeah, we just like to do it, you know.
Zach Wilde just needed another income stream, you know.
Is Zach Wilde playing with Pantera now? I guess I hadn't caught that.
Oh yeah, huh. It's Zach Wilde, some dude on drums, Rex. how'd they get Rex? And then
I can't believe he was available.
Noted Nazi heroin addict Phil Anselmo on lead vocals.
That seems like
it's nasty, dude.
Well, like, you know, Zach Wilde's one of those guitar players that like was never really for me in the way that like, you know, Steve Vai and Joe Satriani and, you know, other guy, you know, shredders and noodlers. But the vibe was always bad with Zach Wilde, I feel. And he feels very fitting to be in Pantera.
Has anyone ever gone to see Black Label Society, like, just them? I feel like they're only, like, the 13th band on some festival. Like, that's where you see Black Label Society is,
yeah.
Is like, oh, hey, they're playing on the third stage.
Well, I couldn't have told you what his band was. I knew that he played with Ozzy Osbourne for a while. And
oh, Ozzy Osbourne's guitarist, huh? Is he the best one? The guy who wrote all the cool riffs that you like so much? Is that one? Oh, it's not? He didn't do any of those?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's most gross for the family Dimebag, who I assume had to sign off on it.
Well, yeah, that's, yeah, you know, that's just a bad situation, all around.
I mean, look, Dimebag was famously kind of careful with money and forward thinking. He's a really smart guy. Same thing with Vinnie Paul. Both really smart guys.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I think we should move on to a segment that I've dubbed "Don't Call It a Comeback," because in the artistic sense, it isn't one. I wanted to talk through some artists who, like Steely Dan, had an improbable late career resurgence. And like Steely Dan, it doesn't matter if the resurgence kind of sucked. You know what the clearest analog to the clearest parallel to them is? Fleetwood Mac did exactly this same shit with the dance at the same time period. Like 1997 comes along and they're like, time to do Grammys. And indeed 20 they
years
did.
Later.
Yeah, perfect. Like on the nose, nostalgia trip, 20 years after, the people who liked us have money now. Boom. And they won a bunch of Grammys and they're out because they still hated each other. And they continued to have nothing of substance new to say because it is after 1978.
No, that's kind of the light side or the success version of this, because yeah, it's the exact right time frame. I happen to love the dance. I think that, like, you know,
I've never heard it. I'm just being a dickhead, but it's
nostalgic. Well, like, And I don't recall if they had an album out at the time, but certainly the resurgence of Silver Springs.
If it was
about
a brand new band, if it was from a brand new band you never heard of called Mackie McFleet, like, would you like it?
Well, and the weird thing to me is that, like, the reason, and I'm we don't need to talk about anything other than Silver Springs, because, you know, every that's the new thing that is the value add, and I think the power is kind of wrapped up in the context and the history. So I guess no, but I still think that's like an incredible live music performance.
Trying to get Matt to acknowledge that he was looking at this through Silver String colored glasses. So another artist that did like exactly this shit, but way more successfully, Santana.
Right. Yeah. It's
time to win some Grammys, motherfucker. And boy, goddamn, did he do it. And after we like listened to the Santana record and I've listened to more of his like early stuff, I am increasingly like, oh yeah, get the bag, Santana.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's water under the bridge how much I hated Smooth and how many times I had to hear it.
It's part of the background radiation at this point.
I'm glad Santana got oh my God, amount of money.
Yeah. Good for you, Carlos.
Right.
this is kind of perhaps 5 years behind the era that we're talking about, but Cher kind of did a
on my list, yeah.
You might say she turned back time, as it were. The line here in picking these artists is like, well, how low is the low, and and how high did the second high have to be for it to be a resurgence, or were they really just kind of hanging on?
Yeah, I you know what I think, where I think the line is? It's exactly the Eagles' Hell Freezes Over.
Eagles was exactly the thing that
I... Yeah, it's because that is just a reunion cash grab. That is not a resurgence. That is a like tour promo item, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, they came back to do a tour, and then they recorded some of it, and then they released it.
I don't remember... if I've told this story on pod before, but a similar phenomenon was I was gifted tickets to Peter Frampton, and it was the 35th anniversary of the Frampton Comes Alive live LP. So you'd see Peter Frampton 35 years later playing Frampton Comes Alive. He was at the Gilroy's, and you know, it was fine. It was a pretty good show. I think we left it intermission because it was like Tuesday. But the thing that I remember was you could buy the recording of that evening. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, that's kind of cool, I guess. But like, isn't the whole thing that it's just... it was a live record then, you know, and
I feel like it's for those people who are like, it sounded exactly like the album. I loved it. So, I've got a couple that I want to acknowledge because they exist, but I don't have much to say about them, which is Johnny Cash had the Hurt and all.
Yes. Yes.
And David Bowie had a couple of albums that are well regarded, but I ain't heard them. So I don't know.
Both guys on my list as well. I know Bowie had done some Trent Reznor collaboration that seemed to kind of break through. But Bowie is kind of like, well, yeah, he was putting out records.
I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world.
It's purely a like kind of... I feel like he was just more in the sort of zeitgeist with the like last two or three records he made before he died. He was part of, we had us a little trend there of like guys making a record knowing they're dying. Like,
yeah,
the Lou Reed record is that, the last Bowie record, and the last Warren Zevon record is the like famous one. Cause he was doing Letterman every 3 weeks to talk about how he was fucking dying. He was like, you gotta buy this record. I'm fucking dying. It was like, God damn, Warren Zevon.
I do remember that for sure. Yeah.
It was I was like, I'm inspired and also bummed out. Play Lawyers, Guns and Money.
This one is one where perhaps the highs were too high at the beginning, but Bruce, the boss himself, Bruce Springsteen, you know, he did Born in the USA, and it was the biggest fucking thing anybody'd ever seen. And then, like, is 10 years enough kind of lower in the hinterlands to count for a resurgence when he was doing those music or the soundtrack tracks in the 90s?
I mean, I feel like we got to disqualify him after he went woke and said all them things about Mr. Trump. I don't know. I feel like that was a like the I feel like there's just always a like huge Bruce Springsteen contingent, and they're like this like kind of horde that there's kind of like you can't do anything about him. He's like there's around.
There's a Springsteen gravitational force
they're grazing over. Don't worry about them. Like they don't usually come around this time of year. Mm-hmm. So an artist that I think had two of these is Bob Dylan. I think Bob Dylan had
two resurgences. Yeah.
I think the first one was when he got so mad at his wife that he stopped singing about Jesus and he made blood on the tracks. And the second is Time Out of Mind, when in the late 90s, people were like, he still got it. And it's like, well, he hasn't still got it for the last like 23 years. It's not like we missed it. He made a bunch of garbage.
Yeah, he was doing gospel. I had thought and you know I would have to check the timeline, but I thought Blood on the Tracks was even pre
was it pre-Christian stuff?
Yeah,
I know it was
Blood on the Tracks and Desire, I think, are both pre-Christian era. Like I don't, but still, yeah, you're dead on.
Oh, my joke was so good though.
Well, and Blood on the Tracks really even itself was a resurgence, because I mean, yeah, he had the motorcycle wreck and
I'm saying. Blood on the Tracks was like already a comeback, and
right,
I know it's
exactly
only 5 years, but like he had like he had such a high peak,
right?
And then he crashed his motorcycle, and then some stuff happened. Wife made him mad. And then he made like an 8-minute song about a deck of cards fighting each other, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Roughly, yes. I say this as a you know affirmed, confirmed, you know loud and proud Dylan fan. I like that song has puzzled me.
Rosemary combed her hair and took a cabbage into town. She slipped in through the side door, looking like a queen without a crown. She fluttered her false eyelashes and whispered in his ear, sorry darling that I'm late, but he didn't seem to hear. He was staring into space over at the Jack of Hearts.
I remember really digging it when I was like, when I like listened to Bob Dylan a bunch. And during the like Blood on the Tracks period, I liked it, but I always kind of liked those Dylan shit kickers. To me harkened back to a like the band can't quite hold it all together era
from a
like,
Buick Six kind of thing. Yeah, yeah,
like outlaw blues kind of like where we're just kind of shambling along.
Someone who definitely did not have two career resurgences, but is not as talented as Bob Dylan is the Beach Boys. I would say Kokomo is a resurgence
counts,
boomlet.
Yeah. Kokomo for sure counts. It's devastating that it counts. Meet Me in the Morning is the song on Blood on the Tracks that I like so much.
Meet Me in the Morning rules. Yes.
Yeah.
Meet me in the morning. 56 and Wabasha.
Anyway, I just didn't want to talk about Kokomo. I was looking it up because I couldn't remember it.
So, do you
have any more?
I don't really in front of me. You know, as we wind down, another one may occur to me. But
so I'm going to preempt a lot of them with the last one on my list, which is we should remember that every single indie rock band of any renown has gotten back together, and they are currently touring, and they have made 2 albums. They aren't good.
Yeah.
But this has happened. If there was a band you used to like and you're about our age, they are together. Look it up. Like, they're mm-hmm. they will tour occasionally. They all do now. 'Cause you can get your niche together so right. much more easily. Like, you can get like, hey, everybody who loved Archers of Loath, assemble, assemble. And then they have a few shows. Everyone's like, we got to see Archers of Loath. Mm-hmm. And they disappear back into the ether. Maybe they'll make a record. Maybe they won't. If they do, won't be good. So that's all I got about Don't Call It a Comeback, because in the artistic sense, it isn't one.
Everyone except for the Beach Boys, I will say, I would rather listen to than Two Against Nature.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know what the rest of the Cher record is like. I know that Eagles record is dog shit.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard Get Over It?
I believe so, yes.
It is a
let me guess. It's Don Henley being spicy.
It's Dickhead Henley talking about, like, stop whining about everything, from the guy who brought you Don't Write Press Stories about the drugged up young woman who paramedics had to revive. Please don't write news stories about that, and get over it. It's bad. It's really bad.
This is how much my brain has, you know, just settled into its ways. I was on a plane earlier this year, and somebody had a Deadhead bear like hat on their ball cap or something in first class, and just it's that revenge of the boomer shit that, you know, was, I guess, kind of talking about reunions or comebacks. You know,
there's a Kirsten Dunst movie called Get Over It that is bad for SEO for the Eagles.
Oh yeah. But all of that is to say, Don Henley sucks, and I get, you know, I don't know why I would I would think of that, but that is what I thought of. We should pick what we're gonna do next. I think the listeners are satisfied with our takes on Two Against Nature. We are this last album.
Yeah, and the last 2 minutes have been cut. I've just been listening to Get Over It, the 1999 remaster. They remastered it like 4 years after they made it. They fucked it up, apparently. They had to master it again.
Oh, man.
I'm gonna send this on over your way.
Okay.
Something's
coming in the chain.
It is horrible.
Do do do.
Let's try to do a synced up.
Okay.
Let's try to sync watch.
Okay. All right. I've got it. I'm ready to 3, 2, 1, go.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
They also turned the delay pedal on, but
they had to.
But it's awfully bluesy.
If you want to try to talk sense into Joe Walsh in the mid-90s, be my guest.
I feel like in almost every case, that dunna 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 dunna, where you're kind of hammering on the five to the six, that guitar strumming, I feel like January 1st, 1970, you better be pretty fucking sure that you got it if you're gonna pull that one out. Ugh. That is very whiny. I think that's Don Felder.
I mean, whichever one of them was better at pinch harmonics had to do it.
And is there anything less... Is it anything less pleasant than just a surly boomer?
I mean, we don't even have to generalize. Is there anything less pleasant than Don Henley when he's, like, in a bad mood? When he was like, man, this cocaine hotel is crazy. It was fine. But anytime he's like, let me tell you how you ought to live. No, you don't want to do that.
Oh, the bridge. When shit kicking goes wrong.
Okay, I think that's about enough of that. Once we get past the bridge, we know nothing else is gonna nothing else new is gonna happen. Why would we listen past that?
Are they gonna play the chorus twice? I bet they're gonna play the chorus twice.
So anyway, yeah, we should choose what we're doing next and not ever listen to the Eagles Get Over It ever again.
I think we got a couple of really strong contenders here. Although there was lots of electric guitar on this album, I feel like we've been doing some kind of funkier and in the case of Ween, just weirder and folkier. You know, maybe we need a nice rocker in the vein of Don Henley and Get Over It. Maybe not that, but something like Ace of Spades, perhaps. I'm very excited to do that Cocteau Twins record. We can save it if we want to do something else, but
there's two that I'm pretty excited about. Actually three. This Stray Cats record, I think,
okay,
is gonna be a good deal of fun. I think the Mahavishnu Orchestra, whatever the main one is.
Okay,
I think it'll be an interesting, weird time. And I am super pumped about you got your finger on it. That Cro-Mags record.
I know nothing about this. I'm curious what your
Cro-Mags
means
are like
here.
Like tough guy New York hardcore.
Okay, that sounds advertised, I would say.
The weightlifting kind of hardcore. Like, not okay. The minor threat, we're going to bounce off each other and like, hey, you guys, the cops are here. Like, the kind that like, do these guys maybe like the cops a little bit? It seems like they might. That's the kind of hardcore we're doing with the Cro-Mags. So, I don't know. I'm really advocating for Cro-Mags or Stray Cats, I think, at the end of the day. I think both of which fit the rockin' in different ways.
I think the spirit is moving me towards the Cro-Mags, but I must point out, I knew I would get one more in. Brian Setzer, another kind of comeback resurgence in a big way, probably bigger than before.
Oh yeah, certainly bigger. Yeah. We're actually on pace for we should be getting another one like here any minute, because we had like 85 and then, and then the next one's going to be gigantic.
Brian Setzer resurgence growing exponentially.
Like one of those anomalous waves where like all the waves in the ocean just happen to all amplify each other and you get like a 70-foot wave in the middle of nowhere. I can't remember what those are called. They're real. For a long time people thought they were not real, but they are real. We know that because of oil drilling platforms where they like are out there and it's a fixed height and they're like, oh fuck.
Yeah. It's really where we do our most important scientific work.
I kind of am up for the Stray Cats, considering we did metal-ish somewhat recently with Faith No More.
That's true.
And yeah. I feel like we, like, the next, like, heavy music thing we do is going to be this Cro-Mags record. I think we can, like, that's pretty clear, I think. But I think we got to get down with the Rockin' Sounds of Rockabilly.
Blast Off is the name of the record I'm seeing here.
That is my understanding. Yes.
Okay. Well, and you know what?
We can just look at the main one, which is what I put for several of these artists because I didn't know. I was like, well, I don't know. Whatever the main one is.
I'm good with I'm good with Stray Cats. That will give us some built in. Segment material as well. You know,
we're gonna make fun of haircuts for like 25 minutes. I'm sorry, what was it? Blast Off.
Yes, Blast Off is how it is being reported here on our tracking spreadsheet. So join us next time as we
doesn't have Stray Cat strutting on it. Stray Cat Strut is on there on an earlier record, but we should still do Blast Off. Blast Off is like the one.
Well, and I feel like, you know, for an artist of that, you know, we're going to do a bit of just general career, thoughts and assessment as well. So for those general career thoughts and assessment and a specific review of Blast Off, join us next time, dear listener, as we change the tunes again. Until then, Brett, any final thoughts? Don't listen to this record.
Don't listen to this record and stay tuned next time for some real mean Robert Christgau stuff I've already found about the Stray Cats.
Until then, dear listener, we thank you for listening and don't forget to listen to music.
If you want to listen to some music you're not sure you'll like, go to directory.bandcamp.com. That's where I put music that I make, and if you like beeps and boops and occasional guitar chugs, you might like it. directory.bandcamp.com. We'll be right back.